In a tower by the river, there lived a man.
Castle.
There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward, with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso, in a tower by the river, Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun, he sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
Hello, everybody. Another edition of Radio Free Chicago in podcast form. The Chicago Way with John Cass, Jeff Carlin, and sitting in today, my former leg man, now a columnist himself, William Lee. Good morning or good day to you, sir.
Good morning, John Cass and Jeff Carlin.
Hey, good morning.
Hey, guys, before we start, I just wanted to, I don't think tip of the hat is the right word, but we have a holiday this week that is without question the most significant holiday in the entire Christian world. Billions of people celebrating the resurrection of Jesus Christ. And I wonder what will be in the papers and in the media about it. I know that we'll have stories about Easter bunnies and deviled eggs. I've seen those now. Where do you get the best deviled eggs? Because you'll have all those deviled eggs, and you want a deviled egg recipe, the chocolates, the peeps, you know, the spring dresses, the young men at brunch, you know, with their jackets and grandma smiling lovingly in the commercial. But where will there be a discussion, if at all, on the nature of what the holiday means? It's odd that we celebrate in our culture now, we talk about multiculturalism and how important it is for everybody to express themselves and their true feelings about where they stand vis-a-vis the universe and the world. And it's difficult at the same time for people to even acknowledge their Christianity. And I thought, I just wanted to say to everyone who's listening, to all of the my Western Christian friends who are celebrating, Happy Easter to you and to all your families, because to have the idea of what we're celebrating, God sends his son to earth, that son is crucified and resurrected, is something that I don't think we in our in the journalism world have an easy time even discussing. And I wanted to bring it out this way because I want you guys to tell me, when I first started talking about it, Will, I know Will, I know I saw the eyebrows like, what? And Jeff was shifting in his chair like, what? It is odd, isn't it, to even bring it up this way?
Yeah.
How do you react? How did you react to it?
Well, I didn't even think about it, John, the way you kind of said that you know, the media doesn't touch, you know, Easter as we know it. You know, Easter as we know it is a lot different, especially in the media, than Easter as it is as, you know, a concept and historically. And I think you're very poignant, as always, John. But you're right, and I didn't think of that. You know, and then what I went to was thinking about my niece and nephew, my god kids, my brother's kids, and thinking about what their perception is of Easter. I mean, they're involved in the church. They go to church regularly. They go to the CCD. They do all that. But I you know, this past weekend they were supposed to go to and they did an Easter egg hunt in Palatine. You know, what northwest suburbs.
Right.
And I think, you know, is all they think about Easter is a bunny and, you know, colored eggs and
pagan
candy.
Fertility symbols.
Right. Exactly.
Right, yeah, right.
And it didn't really dawn on me that until you mentioned that's. That's probably their only frame of reference. And granted, they're in second and third grade, but they're at that time where they should probably be understanding the idea of sacrifice, the idea of giving the best that you have for somebody else to make their lives better, which is essentially the concept of Easter, is that God gives, you know, this the best thing he has, which is his only son,
to save us,
to save our sins and absorb our sins, essentially. I think that's something that people probably don't think about enough. And think about regularly, especially at Easter, even though it is the meaning of Easter. Even, especially media, and I think you nailed that. And then beyond Christmas, I mean, Christmas is great. It's a celebration of this thing.
What is Christmas? It's about wrapping a Volvo, of a luxury car, in a big red bow for your hot supermodel wife, probably your third one, And then she looks at it and goes, honey,
Right.
But that's what, it's not about the birth of Christ.
Right.
It's about how much gifts can I, what's my bottom line on selling luxury gifts?
And I would say Easter is probably, from a message-only standpoint, more important than Christmas in that regard.
Yes, it is the resurrection of Christ.
Right. And I mean, Christmas is a miracle. The fact that, a virgin born a child, amazing. But miracles happen, and if you follow Christianity in any religion, really, miracles happen in spades, essentially, because you've got all these saints that did miracles.
Mm-hmm.
But Easter is really, really more about the essence.
It's the center of it.
Right.
And I don't think here's a white guy talking about Christ and Easter. For some reason, when you do that, people kind of freak a little bit. They step back. Why is that?
Well, right now we've gotten to the point, I think, where we don't talk about, the religious, unless we're talking about them. We're talking about the religious or evangelical.
As a weapon.
Right.
As a weapon to get taxes out of you. That's how the liberals used Matthew. It's always about, you're not Christian unless you support Obama's tax deal. Or something like that.
Well, they're always discussed as a group to, a means to an end. Mm-hmm. If you can't win them or if you lose them or something like that. So it's...
But the center of it.
Sure.
The center of it is something that is difficult for journalists to discuss. Although we can discuss theological differences in Islam, it is, medieval theocrats creating a deadly civil war. We can talk about this and that. But we can't talk about it here. Why?
Well, we don't. Well, when Jeff mentioned, the terms of sacrifice and all of that, as journalists, I can't think of many times when we've actually discussed sacrifice on the parts of the people who we cover, whether they be elected officials or, occasionally that topic breaches if, a parent, does something to save their child or something like that, a family member or a complete stranger, Good Samaritans. But it's not something that we even talk about or even it comes into
it because
we're so cynical. A part of it is we stoke our own cynicism because we need to because we're especially here in Chicago. But I'll tell you something else that Jeff mentioned about the, and both of you mentioned about the holidays, Christian versus Easter versus Christmas. The other day, for the first time, I'd heard a Easter commercial for toys,
What is that?
I've never known... they were trying to make it like...
I saw it too.
What do your kids want for Easter?
Barbie and Ken in some car. I'm waiting for G.I. Joe to be in that car and kick that little wussy Ken out and take Barbie for a ride, like in the Nissan commercial. But what does that have to do with Easter?
I said to myself, is this a thing now? Easter toys? Usually maybe if when I was a kid, you maybe got a bunny. That was maybe the toy that was most synonymous with Easter. Definitely chocolate eggs, and that's it.
The reason I brought it up, guys, was just to shock you a little bit and to see how we deal with it in the media, but also because a couple days ago I was with a friend of mine. We weren't friends at first, and he's a friend to Will Lee as well, and his name is Judge Murray. And Judge Murray and I were sitting in his courtroom in Indiana after he had met and after Dave Potchin, remember the bank robber who wanted to go to rob the bank so he could go to prison. Mm-hmm. Robbed the bank, sat on the curb waiting for the cops. He didn't use a gun. He just wanted to go to prison so he could have a place to live.
Go back to prison, right?
To prison. And Judge Murray had thrown the book at him the first time. And then he sees him again. He's like, wait a minute. What are you doing? And he said, I'm just a throwaway. Send me back. And Judge Murray didn't do it. Well, there was a parole hearing thanks to Will Lee. I was notified again because I'm still discombobulated in terms of, keeping things straight as far as schedules and so forth.
Since you're leg manless.
Since my leg manless has moved to another higher plateau, he's evolved. And Judge Murray and I, after the hearing, and Potchin asked to shake his hand, and after that was over, I was going to go talk to Potchin outside. And Judge Murray sent the bailiff, said, Judge would like to talk to you. So we went in the back in his room, in his office. We sat down and started talking. And it was profoundly moving because he started talking. I mean, Judge Murray's a guy, a criminal court judge, has seen everything, like columnists, like police reporters, like news producers. We've seen a lot. And a lot of the things we don't want to talk about at home. And he talked about something moved him when he saw Pacha the second time. And I kind of buried it in the column. I put it at the end because I had all that boilerplate to explain it. Mm-hmm. But he said, words came to me. And he said, you know, I don't want to make it like, I don't want to talk, you know, you don't want to talk a lot about God in our job. But words came to him. Do something. Do something for this man when he first met him, the second time when he met him. And then he talked about growing up in the church, and he started singing a song. And it was a spiritual, an old Negro spiritual, and it was probably one of the most moving experiences of my life. To be with this man, both of us, kind of cynical, kind of battered by the worst of people, and kind of in two respects, we're like coppers in a way. Like coppers are probably worse off. They're like the garbage men of society. They have to clean up everything. And it was just something that I just wanted to say. I don't make a lot of friends for a lot of reasons, but I really count on Judge Murray now. And it was just great. And he said, have a happy Easter. And I just wanted to tell everybody that. So have a happy Easter. And now can we get on with the rest of the program? Which brings me to crime and punishment and people saddened by the brutality of the world and an amazing phenomenon that Will Lee wrote about in a column last week about black migration out of Chicago for safer climates, for safer places. Mm-hmm. And I just say that it wasn't an outstanding Jeff Carlin.
Absolutely.
Right?
I think, and of people who I meet and I talk to, you know, like my parents, for example, I mean, they live out in the suburbs. They have kind of an outsider's view of what happens in the city as far as violence and mm-hmm. politics. And I always make sure, especially when Will, I mean, that this piece, and there was the piece you wrote over the summer, last fall, the piece about the school lost a couple, you know, was it three kids in the mm-hmm. course of a week or a month, whatever it was. Mm-hmm. And, you know, those are the stories. These are the stories that are actually being missed. These are the things that are really affecting the South Side. Sure, the gangs are controlling a lot of things. And I mentioned it to Will as we were walking in. You know, the cream is rising to the top on the South and West Sides and then evaporating and leaving, essentially. You know, the best of society can put forth, you know, leaves those areas, flees those areas, and those areas never get better, not specifically a result, but partially a result. And I think if anybody really wants to get a good handle on the real tragedy outside, obviously, of lives being lost, is Will Lee when he writes about, you know, the South Side and why people are leaving and what people don't think about and the West Sides.
Before I ask him to talk about, I want to read from his brilliant column, A Crumbling, Dangerous South Side Creates Exodus of Black Chicagoans. And I made a note of the... Now a multitude of black residents, Will Lee writes, have called it quits with their hometown, searching for safety and prosperity beyond the city limits, my own friends and family among them. It's been a humbling experience watching as those worlds, those communities filled with stable families and businesses, crumble into the dust. The reason why Will Lee was able to write this story is because he thinks outside the box and he thinks clearly. Yes, he's African-American. I just want you to know, when I hired him, I didn't hire him, Will, because you were a black guy. I hired you because you think, and you don't write from a pigeonhole. You write as a reporter and as a thinker. And this was an amazing, amazing column.
Thank you. I appreciate that. That means a lot coming from you. You know, if there's anybody's opinion who matters, it's yours. So... But I've heard from a lot of people who I respect about it. And the only thing I can really say in the short version is just that, you know, sometimes as a reporter or just as a citizen, you don't put it all together. you know, this phenomenon of black folks moving out isn't new. It's been going on for like 30 years or beyond. You know, we've talked about it before. And just kind of, you know, when people would look at the problems, they look at the problems, the symptoms of it. They don't look at what the what really kind of caused this illness. And it's folks who have been leaving, people who've been, you know, as soon as they could in the 60s, 70s, moving to the suburbs. I've had family live out in suburbs for, you know, 20, 30 years as well. So when they keep leaving, like all the violence and all this depressed, you know, sort of atmosphere, it just keeps, you know, pushing all of these old school folks out, you know.
The middle class, what we called the white ethnics, had to be, they were vilified and, you know, marginalized, and they left. And now the black middle class leaves. Your description, without saying so, is of a city that's dying, and that this has to stop.
Right. There's no, that's kind of the thing. I got a few emails from people saying, well, you have no solutions for it. And it's like, I can't tell you what the solution is. This is still going on, and no one has figured out a way to kind of suture this. But first, you have to see this as one of the problems. This is one of the cuts on the body that is Chicago. You can't just say, okay, well, here's my solution for it. It isn't. Folks are leaving, and there isn't that experience, there isn't that age, there isn't that revenue coming in to replace it. And what do you do about that? You know, build bike lanes? I don't think so.
Bike lanes is not a big Southside thing.
No.
I just, Jeff, right? I'm just saying to all my hipster friends who are having a meeting this week about, like, where they're going to get their bike lane. I don't see that on 79th and Cottage.
No.
Well, the guy in the bike.
They got other stuff to really worry about.
Unless it's a little bike and the kids helping sling, you know what I mean? But not like a racing bike.
Yeah, my other half on the WGN side, Brian Altimer, who you know, Brian.
Yeah.
Or you know, John. He lives in Inglewood, and it gets him every time when he sees, you know, a new bike lane. He says, bike lane's all over by where I live. Nobody uses them. What the hell? Why are we wasting money and wasting time, effort, any of that on there? But actually, to Will's point, I think if people who criticize someone like yourself or even you, John, for writing about what's happening and then say, oh, well, where's your solution? That's not your role in this society. I mean, sure, there are people who do write in journals who write about how to fix this, and they do.
They think they know.
Exactly. But the people who should be fixing this are elected officials, are politicians, are community leaders. And they don't do anything other than cast aspersions on the other side of them or the other people who are
playing
them.
A game.
Exactly. And they think, people say, oh, they blame the media for this. And sure, right. Media controls a message that's absorbed by millions of people.
Whatever.
But the people who sure are at fault are the people who we elect to fix these problems, and they don't do it.
But they're elected, I think, in response to popular movements,
sure.
Right? Now and one thing that Will said was that people are leaving because there's too many monsters out there pulling triggers and killing people.
Mm.
And if you want to do a whole Good Wife thing, like I watched on The Good Wife, which I can't stand now, but I did it because Betty was watching it and I wanted to have couch time with my wife, is, you know, they put the gun manufacturers on whatever trial. You know, they think they won something. It's a little tricky little TV thing. But in real life, we've got Black Lives Matter, Laquan McDonald, Rahm Emanuel coming out, a little media coming out party, talking about Parks and Recreation, although I heard people congratulating themselves for asking like one tough, half tough question. I almost texted you like, dude, chill, you know? but he's doing that in a variety of media venues to try to rehabilitate himself. Meanwhile, the chief social worker of Cook County, Kimberly Fox, has been elected in the Democratic primary, presumably will be elected in November for state's attorney. Now, what's she going to do, Willie? Is she just going to give a hug to everybody, or is she going to start putting these bangers in the slam like they're supposed to be?
Well, that is the question. You and I have talked about this in great detail. And the question is, like, when you are the top prosecutor and a county prosecutor, you're in the hot seat. You see a lot of things.
What's the job?
Right.
What is the job for her to do?
Well, two things. You're putting people in jail and then kind of looking past the things from friends, you know, people who put you in here. She had to get a lot of support from a lot of people.
Right.
And people connected to those people are going to get in trouble, you know, as so often does. So you have to kind of look towards the violent criminals and then look past it. It's a really tricky sort of pathway. But now she has to kind of find herself. Will she be successful in doing many of the things she said she would be? And that's the question. But she has her number one thing, the thing that's going to keep her in that job, is whether she is able to get the bad guys or these really troubled people out of the way, you know, out of the way so that regular citizens aren't mowed down in the neighborhoods.
Look, you want to get rid of the problem? Mandatory. I'm not for mandatory minimums on anything except gun crimes. You pull a stick and we say, oh, the little 7-year-old accidentally shot. The 14-year-old accidentally shot. What the hell are you talking about? Accidental. What do you mean accidentally shot?
I know.
You left your piece, the kid grabbed it, or we pulled the gun out and at the table and the 14-year-old got shot in the throat. That just happened the other day.
Right.
What are you talking about? What is accidental about a gunshot?
And nobody knows where that gun came from.
You know?
It's
come on.
And I think you nail it, John. I mean,
there's no accidental. There's never been an accidental shooting. That's nonsense.
Unless you were by yourself cleaning your gun and you're an idiot.
Yeah, and usually that's a copper who did himself and his friends make it look like, right? You know, they used to kick the gun cleaning kit over on the basement floor. You know, and when people know how to use firearms, they don't do it in the bathroom because they know where to put it. In regular people who commit suicide usually do it in the bathroom because they can't
easy cleanup.
They can't see where the angle of incidents. But this thing, 14-year-old, what are you talking? Who's what is that? Accidental? What is that?
Can I add something, John?
I'd like to, please.
More than that, it's in addition to all of these accidental shootings, you also have quite a few recent cases just in the past few days of parolees getting their hands on weapons and shooting up. This guy who just got charged with trying to rob and then and kill a Chicago police officer. I covered a case recently where a guy who just got out of parole in South Suburban Harvey went looking for weed and shot up an apartment, killing a teenage girl. He was out for maybe a couple of months and somehow got his hand on some, you know, semi-automatic that he used to blow hole into an apartment. How do you do that?
Was he in on a gun charge?
No. That was the whole thing. He didn't get his parole revoked until he actually murdered somebody. So, but, you know, that's the thing about Chicago. Chicago's the same type of city it's always been. You can get whatever it is that you're looking for if you know where to look.
You know what? Those 3 rock cases, I don't care about them. Leave the 3 rock cases alone. You want to get on the pipe, Grandma? Because now Grandma's on the pipe, okay? Let's just be honest here. It used to be Mommy on the pipe, Grandma took care of the kids. Now Grandma's on the pipe, too. Mm. Or whatever it is now, right?
Grandma can be
still on the,
grandma
still,
can be young too. That's the thing.
Yeah,
Well, I don't know. I guess.
It's
theoretically,
happened.
Yeah. Great great grandma could be 50. But the point is, leave the 3 rock cases alone. Mm-hmm. Put the guys with the guns away. Mandatory minimum. Here's the problem. Toni Preckwinkle hates mandatory minimum. Mm. She had the Kwaminator, Kwame Raoul, the state senate, kill mandatory minimum. Sentencing for gun crimes. Okay, now what? Now what? Now Willie writes a column, Black Southside, middle, anybody who can run is running, except for Willie. He's going to be by himself.
Just me and my friends. And I'll tell you something else. Judges are also making, and a few, and it seems like every hearing I'm attending, anytime there's a gun case, the judge, like Judge Peggy Shampis or Judge Kiriakos, they'll say, hey, this is a gun case. They'll give a higher bond than they would if it was just a regular sort of, you know, a theft or something like that.
Lowest possible bond, you're under high school graduate.
Right.
Lowest possible bond.
But, and they'll look and they say, well, how many rounds were in the gun? Has he ever had a history of violence, any of that stuff? And they say, well, you know what? Even though this person's been assessed as a low risk, he had a gun, he or she wasn't supposed to have one, $100,000. You know, it's something that they're voicing publicly to say, hey, you know, some people are saying against it, but we're taking our, you know, seriously.
Note to Mayor Tom Dart, not everybody in your jail is a mental problem. Okay. Yeah, there are gun issues in Cook County and Chicago, but there's another land, a place of beautiful women in leather pants, flying dragons, swords, men in tights, and a smart ass dwarf. Can you say dwarf?
Yes. Father, I'm guilty. Guilty? Is that what you want to hear?
You admit you poisoned the king?
No. Of that I'm innocent. I'm guilty of a far more monstrous crime.
I'm guilty of being a dwarf.
I like the show. And it's not The Good Wife. And it's definitely not Madam Secretary, which is both, they're both like the elect Hillary Clinton CBS shows. You know, the whole thing, Tay Leone as Secretary Clinton, give me a break, all right? And Good Wife, and that, we talked, Will and I talked to Good Wife people a long time ago. Yeah. We're still, they still haven't referred to Will Lee in The Good Wife, not me, so I'm dropping them, okay? Plus, Alicia is having affairs with everybody now.
How dare she?
I know. She's like a little minx. She's crazy. But I have another show where there is a Hillary component. The Walk of Shame with Queen Cersei.
There you go.
The Imp. Peter Dinklage, great actor, who killed his father while he was on the crapper with a crossbow. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was, if that's not... Oedipal,
yeah.
and Freudian and all that, I don't know what is the Game of Thrones. And you know what? Will Lee is so Game of Thrones-ish. Do you, like, you're like the fanboy of Game of Thrones, but do you have a name? Like, is there a name for your
persona?
What is it? Like the covetousness. He's like covets Game of Thrones.
I've been looking for every sort of little inch of information just that I can get and just kind of seize upon, because this is, as you already know, I know you're well aware, and Jeff, I think you know too, this is the first time that the season moves on past the books. And right now, it's like, right now you're kind of in uncharted waters. What will the producers do? You know, they've had a talk with author George R. R. Martin, who John met last November.
You met him too. We sat on either side of him. We had like Cajun fries or something. I forgot what it was. We had some like Northwestern food.
Yeah.
The Cajun fries were good.
And we sandwiched him and, you know, kind of tried to pick his brain. And, you know, we got that little gem about, you know, it being the wall being based on the Blizzard 67. But
yeah,
I can't deal with this month long of waiting. And I've been hectoring the HBO people, like, what's going on? Where can we find out something? And, you know, Cass wants to know. Come on, tell us.
You're not even working for me anymore, and he's still using me to get, like, Game of Thrones information.
Hey, you...
What are you doing, man?
I'm helping you out.
He's a good reporter. Come on.
Isn't it? He's like
using every resource.
All right. When last we left Game of Thrones, the dragon, the big male dragon...
Drogon,
flew away with Khaleesi, who I just saw in a bad Terminator movie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And she had her nice little top on. The leather, she had leather pants and a little top.
Sure. And
there was this whole thing, meme about, what's her name, the actress?
Emilia Clarke.
Emilia Clarke and her tops. Remember, she said, I'm not going to show my breasts anymore. I'm just going to wear tops. Then it became Emilia Clarke tops. Everyone wanted not everyone. Guys like me didn't want it.
Right.
You didn't want it. But they were very, they became,
those who were inclined.
They were fashionable in some quarters. So she flies off with the wounded dragon and lands amongst her people of the plains, the Dothraki. And the Khalasar is massing and riding around her as the mother of dragons lands among them. That was so, I don't know.
John, you always seem to really connect with the Dothraki. What's that all about?
I did this on a radio station that fired me. Maybe, and I don't know why, but maybe because I sucked on radio. But we had Jeff Carlin. Did you get her? Did you get the guy, creator?
The guy who invented the language, yes.
The guy who invented the language of Dothraki. He was. I interviewed him, and I told him that, Betty, I wanted my wife to speak Dothraki to me. Wouldn't it be, like, isn't it kind of sexy, like sex role-playing, you know? Like my horse lord, my great horse lord, with his braid and leather pants and a big sword riding a stallion. I mean, isn't that kind of romantic?
That is very romantic.
She didn't think so.
No, I'm not surprised.
I think you'd be a brutal call, you know, with your long ponytail just chopping down people. You know?
There are pictures of me riding a bear.
I'm going to Photoshop you in as the call. That's my goal for the next week.
Really? So. If someone beats you to it, I'll put it up on Facebook.
I don't know.
But I am riding on a bear with Putin's
I've
chest.
I've seen that.
That is pretty awesome.
That is.
Better than riding on the hummingbird.
Yeah.
Someone else put me on a hummingbird that's kind of like Ant-Man weirdness.
Yeah.
Can we get back to the weird Game of Thrones thing, though?
Absolutely.
What is going to happen? I've got Khaleesi. She's done her walk of, not Khaleesi.
Cersei.
Cersei. Queen Cersei's done her walk of shame. Now she hates all the religious right. She's going to kill them all.
And she's got a zombie knight at her beck and call.
What is that? Do you know about this
mountain.
Zombie? The mountain.
The mountain.
Tell us.
Oh, I just, that's one of the big things. It's like they had a trailer that came out maybe 2 weeks ago where they showed that where he's there for.
Frankenstein.
Absolutely. The only thing that we know for sure and everyone's been talking about is where's Jon Snow and when does he come back? Does he come back? When does he come back? You know, it's the, like the worst kept secret of all, you know.
Well, I thought he died when he was with Andy Samberg in that stupid tennis movie that was supposed to be funny. And it was like
no,
the most
bad.
Like, why didn't you just shoot yourself for being in that?
That was a bad
movie. Oh, my God, was that bad.
Kit Harington, I just feel for that guy. He could be a star, but he's just been making the worst sort of, you know, outside projects that I can think of. You know, he even did a direct-to-video release that I just saw it, you know, at the Walmart recently. Like, oh, I've never heard of this, and I will not buy it.
Was it that bad?
Oh, it looked like, well, I had never heard of it at all. So it was kind of like these weird graphics in the box. He's a spy or something, I said. Pass.
Like Nicolas Cage.
Why, does he do direct now?
He directing? Does some. He does all those Disney movies. I mean, I don't think he turns anything down, and it's a lot of it is garbage.
Wasn't he a super? He was going to be a superhero. He was going to be Superman.
Yeah.
Once. Yeah.
Yeah, he was on the running for it.
No, suited up.
But they never went there. They never made that movie.
Something happened. There was a documentary about that. But back to Game of Thrones, which is the important thing.
Absolutely.
Now we got why do we like it so much, and why do women not like the show? Or at least the women in my life don't like the show.
Christine loves it.
She does?
Oh, God.
Betty.
She read the books, too. So.
Christine loves it. What?
Christine read the book.
She so loves it.
Yeah, she's very into it.
Betty got turned off by the Khal Drogo thing in the beginning.
Yeah, I can see that. There's a lot of aggressive male dominance in this, and
in that aspect of
right.
it. But then it turned out that he was really a gentle lover who loved.
Misunderstood.
Right.
She tamed his wild heart, didn't she?
Yes.
You know, with her little tops on and everything.
Sure, they
and those little eggs, the eggs of dragons that turned into dragons.
Well, I'm sure that you know women, necessarily love the bloodshed of it, but I think there's enough, you know, palace intrigue and sort of subtlety. You know, like something where Varys and Littlefinger are, you know, kind of plotting and chatting.
Littlefinger,
yeah.
You mean like is he on the fifth floor of City Hall? That guy.
Oh, of
course. He's pretty good though. Stephen Baelish, who was also. Baelish, right?
Right.
But what's his real name, the actor?
Aidan Gillen, I believe.
Who was an excellent Martin O'Malley in The Wire.
Oh, yeah.
He was in The Wire, right?
That's
he played
right.
The sort of like the cynical white guy, mayor of Baltimore, right?
He has a real skill at playing these sort of duplicitous sort of you know characters. He has
quintessentially American.
Yeah. Oh, it's great.
Even though he's not right,
he's trying to pull off a Baltimore accent. And I was like, I'll go with it. Sure,
sure. It's good. Just give me some crabs on a paper on a newspaper, and I'll give me a beer. But I love the show. Here's the problem with it. It's not family viewing. Let's be honest.
Sure.
You know.
Though your boys love it.
My boys love it now, but it's still kind of. I'm still in that old-fashioned dad mode when two actors are mimicking sex because they're not really having sex on television, I feel squeamish. And I'm not going to get over it. Why?
Because you have kids.
I mean, what, am I the only one?
No,
I mean,
I don't think,
right?
It is, you know, and the
I mean, they're
the
men,
last,
though.
The last season, the previous season when that we're talking about, was a little bit less of the coitus than the first two seasons. The first season was just non-stop,
breasts everywhere,
it was lots of it.
Right. The juvenile fascination with a mammary gland was beyond compare, right?
Yeah, but I think this, they've kind of progressed towards the action and then the intrigue. The politics of it, which, speaking of politics, John.
Yes, ooh, transition.
That's what we do here. Right. What do you think of Jeb Bush endorsing Ted Cruz?
The real Game of Thrones.
Yes, right.
Oh, come on, man. I think that when Fonzie shows up on the Game of Thrones with the shark, I'll know. Maybe in another season.
Sure.
And that with Jeb Bush? Are you kidding me? A little late, dude. All the establishment created, they allowed Donald Trump to flourish so they could kill Rand Paul. You did it, and now eat it. Eat it! Because that's what's going to happen. I'm not crazy about Donald Trump. I'm not crazy about Hillary Clinton either. What are you doing, taking a picture?
Absolutely.
I don't like either one of them. So I'm free. And you know what I'm a little saddened by? Pundits who are trapped by their own party. If you're trapped by a party, if you feel like you have to be for Hillary or Bernie or Donald or Ted, I'm sorry for you, man, because freedom is great. Everyone hates you, but outside, you don't have friends or anything, but outside of that, it's good. And what do you think? Do you think Jeb Bush really makes an impact here?
None. None whatsoever, other than maybe money. I mean, he had the biggest war chest. Maybe he can turn some of that toward the Cruz machine and, quote-unquote, stopping Trump.
Here's Cruz's Cruz, as a conservative, Cruz is right on the money for a lot of things. Mm-hmm. But then he goes and says, we're going to surveil Muslims in their own neighborhoods.
Yeah.
Come on. That's not remotely conservative view, right? I have a problem with that. You know, and anytime Hillary opens her mouth and barks like a dog, I got a problem with it. And anytime Bernie Sanders sings like the good, what is it, this his campaign thing?
This land is our land?
No.
That's from his folk album.
The Big Rock Candy Mountain.
Right.
You should get that. We should have that as the closing music for Bernie and Hillary and the Democrats. You know what I mean? Like where the, it's like where the hobos can eat all the stew and there's cigarette trees and it doesn't cost anything. Come on. The whole country's going to hell in a handbasket.
So we can all agree, though, that Bernie's success is because millennials are now one of the largest, they're the largest generation currently.
They're going to kill the political. I did a column on this, I think. The political divide ultimately is going to be between millennials and the people that they're going to turn into crackers and eat, called baby boomers. It's people. Soylent Green is people. It's going to happen. They hate us. We have to fight them off.
They're making our food out of people. Next thing, they'll be breeding us like cattle for food. You got to tell them. You got to tell them.
Promise, Tiger. I promise. I'll tell the exchange.
You tell everybody. Listen to me, Hatcher. You got to tell them. Soylent Green is people.
One evening as the sun went down and the jungle fire was burning, down the track came a hobo hiking, and he said, boys, I'm not turning. I'm headed for a land that's far away beside the crystal fountains. So come with me, we'll go and see the Big Rock Candy Mountains. In the Big Rock Candy Mountains, there's a land that's fair and bright, where the handouts grow on bushes and you sleep out every night, where the boxcars all are empty and the sun shines every day, on the birds and the bees and the cigarette trees, the lemonade springs where the bluebird sings, in the Big Rock Candy Mountains.
Hey, John, all right, Will. So we were talking about the prevalence or the popularity of Bernie Sanders, and I think it all ties into that you have this millennial generation that's now the largest. They've outgrown baby boomers and obviously the Gen X. And here's a story.
Who's the Gen Xers again?
Gen Xers? Yeah, 35 to 50 is technically Gen X.
Yeah, I guess I fit in that, definitely.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm a cusp because my brother is a Gen Xer, and I'm technically a Gen Y, which is the early half of the millennials. But I fall into the category of more of a Gen Xer.
Got it.
So here's a story in the New York Times. Familiar with Mike, MIC Media. It's a millennial company started by millennials. They do an online website.
Cutting edge.
Yeah, well, they are a quote-unquote news organization. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Does that mean in this context that if you have a sex tape between a professional wrestler who looked like he was on steroids and his best friend's wife, you'd put it on the...
That's Gawker.
Yes, I didn't want to even refer.
Well, but anyway, they, in their opinion, and most people would say that they're not in the tabloid scandal industry. They're more in the millennial-focused news. And they have reporters, and they right. do...
Like what? Like how did those crazy college loans?
Exactly.
Or how can I pay my college loan off when I want like that cool bike from Mayor's Bike Lane?
Exactly. They've sent guys. They've had people who go to Syria. They thought.
Yeah. Okay. Real news.
Real news. I mean, they try. I mean, that's what they do. It's not targeted at millennials. Anyway, so there was a bit of a kerfuffle within their organization. It came out recently that one of their employees went to their president and was like, "Hey, I need some time off
from this from the news organization." Okay,
because I need time off. A friend of mine died. I need to go back to Wisconsin, and this is based in New York. She's like, "Oh, his boss wants to be the millennial, wants to be the friend. You know, that's kind of that mentality. No, you can do no wrong as
What's
long
the
as
the boss like me or Will like newsman
essentially." Chris Alchick, he's the guy who founded it with Jake Horowitz. Alchick runs the business. Horowitz is essentially their lead correspondent.
Right.
This guy goes, says he's taking time off because a friend died. He leaves. He comes back. The Alchick all of a sudden gets wind of this guy's personal blog. And within it, instead of taking time off, guess what he did?
He went to the cemetery and prayed all the time.
He went with his friends into a forest and built a tree house, essentially.
Hmm.
And documented it on a blog.
Did it have, like, an electric bong in the middle of it?
I don't know about that.
Right.
But his boss gets wind of it, and he approaches him, and he says, "Well, what is this?"
Right.
And I apologize. I felt really burned out. I didn't feel like I didn't want to say I just needed time off because I felt burned out, but I needed to get away and clear my head.
So he lied about the funeral, and then he went and built a treehouse in the woods of where? Oregon or something?
I'm not sure where.
Wherever it was.
Wherever it was. So he did that. His boss said, "Okay, well, I get what you're saying. You were overworked. I understand."
What the? Will Lee, hey, weigh in.
John, would you have given me time off to build a treehouse? Because, you know, I would have. Who am I kidding? I wouldn't have built anything.
Will Lee, did you ever see me take time off? Willie's constant admonition to me, old school. "Will you please, you got like the days off coming. Are you going to take it? When? When am I taking it?"
John, for the record, John had weeks off that he never claimed that, you know, he just had weeks and weeks of time that he could just call. It's like, just go someplace, you know, go to the new Fuddruckers or something, you know, go have
some time. Right here, dude. Okay, take that picture of a Mootsa going right his way. Fuddruckers. Why don't you go to Great Clips and get your hair cut or something? I can't even come up with a snappy one after Fuddruckers. Yeah, right. Fuddruckers just floored me. Oh. All right, so, Will, what do you think of Jeff's little story there about these millennials who can lie and then that's okay? That's okay.
Let me be clear about something, John. I grew up in the tail end of the 20th century, a century that was still very
gaslight.
Much... still controlled by, the greatest generation. You know, those folks held on for a very long time.
Horse cabbages or carriages?
Depression, bacon fat sandwiches and all that type of stuff.
Right.
They to say that they wouldn't have gone for this, not only would they have not allowed it, they would have probably beaten you with a razor strap afterwards. So it's all alien to me. You know, like that whole old school, there's nothing particularly old school about this. It's a good gimmick. It worked. I can't say anything about that since it worked like a charm for them. I wish I had that type of power.
I like the story, but I have a suspicion that it's all fake.
I don't think so, John.
I'll tell you why. Because I thought it was a story about some other company, but now that I hear it, it's a story about this news organization letting the guy off. "Oh, you lied to me? Oh, that's okay. Come back. You can lie some more when you're working." Right?
Well, the story was done by the New York Times, and they were focusing on.
Oh, the New York Times did it. They didn't.
Right. Yeah. This isn't written by Mike themselves. Right. This is the New York Times interviewing him and saying, "Well, we heard about this. You know, can you explain it?"
Yeah.
And the title of it is really interesting. It's when millennials run the workplace, and that's the idea that there's now this generational divide between rules and strict organization. And then millennials, which it's freewheeling. What are you feeling at the moment?
Who comes up with that idea?
Which idea?
Who comes up with the idea that it's free? Whose money is being used here? Because if I, you know, what was that, Seinfeld, was it or Seinfeld or something, where the guy comes in and some the lawyer is like in shorts. He's like, put some pants on, man. I have to talk to a lawyer. I'm not talking to you with your shorts on. I mean, I'm like one of these grumpy old men, I guess. If it's my money that I'm investing in this company, you better not, if we're in partners together, you better not be lying to me or we're going to have a discussion, right?
Right. And but
how does this work?
The millennial generation says, well, why? Why can't I wear shorts? I still work just as hard. I can still produce the same things if I'm not wearing pants. And that's the mentality that's led to someone like Bernie Sanders caught fire among them.
You think so? Because Bernie Sanders, who's a hard leftist and so doctrinaire that everything is a rule, on the hard left. I don't get it.
Well, everything's a rule on all the edges, you know? Like, right. You know, do it my way or else.
Well, I mean, that's what the hard left is about. These are the rules. You're the enemy. You have money. We're going to boil you in oil till your marrow comes out and use that to feed the people and give them, you know, free college educations. That's the deal.
They want everyone to be happy. That's the rally cry.
Big Rock Candy Mountain.
Yeah, exactly.
The Big Rock Candy Mountain. Nice. I like this story. I'm going to take a look at it. Maybe I'll write it because, you know, I have nothing to write. I'm in that mode of not having anything to write today.
Sure.
I never have anything to write on the days we tape the podcast. Why?
I don't know.
Where's your 50 stories like you used to bring me when
paid, John. Come on now.
This is free now. But at the old radio station that fired me, used to have like 15, 20 stories.
Uh-huh.
And then I used to show them to Will and say, hey, Will, look at what Jeff's doing. Didn't I? Wasn't I... Right. Total jerk about it. Like, I'd be like, Will, look at what Jeff did. Like, look at your brother, how hard he's working around the house, that kind of thing.
That was never the case, because every time, John, you give him a good idea, he's like, yeah, it's a good idea, but I don't feel like writing it.
I have to wait till it's like 10 minutes before deadline, before stomach acids come out of my nose. So, listen, the millennials are, I will concede now that the millennials are, they're like gods to me. Because they don't have any rules. They live how they wish. They're all going to go on vacation. And there's a Big Rock Candy Mountain with the cigarette trees and the whiskey rivers. And everything's free. And no one has to have rules. And you don't have to do it. You just do what you want. Go in the woods. Build a treehouse, Will. Leave the south side. Go in the woods. Build a treehouse. Maybe there's a bong in the middle. We'll all watch Game of Thrones and do what we want. Don't you think?
Sounds good to me.
I think so. I want to do it too. That's it for this week of the Chicago Way. John Cass, Jeff Carlin, and our special guest, the new budding star columnist of the Chicago Tribune, Will Lee. You wrote a great column, and what did I tell you after you wrote it?
Right. We have to start on the next one.
Where's the next one? Let's get going. All right, everybody. See you next week.